When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Episode 143, Bar Down Breakdown, and we are here with the homie Rishi from Eternal Boy, curator of the Four Chord Music Festival, avid hockey fan. And before we jump into it, let me just talk about the appreciation of something that I have. So as you heard the intro with that Eternal Boy song, I don't know if you knew, but there's this little thing that I love that musicians do when sometimes they go out of the diatonic, like, I'm getting a little music nerdy here, right? So, like, you know, you've got your major scale that just goes from, like, you know, do to do, right? But that little interlude you had where you hop on that flat seven.
Yep.
I really appreciate that, man. That's something.
I have no idea what you're talking about. So it sounds good to me.
It's just like one of those things where it's like a lot of pop artists and like punk bands, like they don't think to do that kind of stuff, but like little flourishes of musicianship. I can't get enough of that. So,
well, you know, we learn from the best: Beethoven, Chopin,
there it
Chopin.
Is. Those so, are the guys.
Those Chopin. Are the dudes.
Love me some Beethoven, dude. That's. But I can definitely appreciate that, but we also appreciate the time you've taken to be on here with us. So thank you so much. Tons to talk about. Before we just dive into hockey, and I'm sure we're going to have a blast chatting about that, let's talk a little bit about Eternal Boy first, because we can, you know, Four Chord is such an awesome thing, and it's great that, you know, you've curated that, and it kind of started from, you know, a small little thing and has grown to be enormous, but Eternal Boy rules, man. So give me some insight about how long Eternal Boy has been a band, the kind of genesis, and how it's sort of developed into what it is now.
Cool. Well, first of all, thanks for being here. I love the podcast. I caught up on all the episodes. You know, there are a few things that are as important to life in life to me as hockey and music. So this is like the absolute best podcast I've been on. So Eternal Boy, been around since 2017, but prior to that, we were a band called the Space Pimps for many, many years, which we are glad we got rid of the name. It was not really the socio-political climate, nor was it the, you know, representative really of anything. We just kind of got stuck with the name. But things picked up really well with the Space Pimps over, you know, the 2000, you know, sixes, sevens through 2017. We are a byproduct of the early 2000s, you know, punk rock, pop punk world. Without Drive Thru Records, Eternal Boy probably wouldn't exist. And for those that don't know what Drive Thru Records is, you can Google it. We have had a lot of cool shit happen, you know, since 2017. We did the name change. The last record by the Space Pimps was called Eternal Boy. So there's kind of a cookie trail that leads back to that. We released our debut record under Eternal Boy called Awkward Phase in 2017. Did great. There's a Billboard record right there, which, it, you know, the dream come true whenever we got that news. Things have been cool. We tour a lot. We've been all over the world. We've played in China, Japan, Europe, Canada, US, obviously. So we're grinders. And I think that the ethos of Eternal Boy, it's all about grinding and all about doing what you love. And our most recent record, Bad Days Are Over, came out in May of 2021. And it's been weird not playing shows.
Now, did I see correctly that was nominated for a Grammy?
So, yeah. So there's like processes with the Grammy. I actually don't know how this happened. I've been trying to figure out for the last 3 weeks, but there's like three processes where like it gets screened out of thousands of bands, and then it gets to the ballot, and there's about 30 or 40 artists in each category that make it to the ballot. And then from that, the Academy votes, and then it gets down to the eight or so that make it actually to the Grammy Award. So we're not, I mean, whenever I'm trying to impress people, I say I'm a Grammy nominated artist, but like in reality, it's kind of the third, fourth round, which is still very, very, very hard to do. But so we're going to find out Tuesday. I mean, there's no way we're getting on the ballot, but we're going to find out Tuesday that we didn't make it on the ballot. So
that's awesome.
I can't think of like a pop punk artist that has made it that far, like through the process. And maybe like, has Fall Out Boy?
I mean, they were on ballots. Blink's recent record, California, was up for the Grammy for Best Rock, and it lost to, I can't remember who it lost to, but yeah, I mean, I only need to explain to you veterans, you know, I mean, pop punk was obviously, I don't want to speak for you, but I assume based on, you know, a lot of the conversations we've had, right? It changed our lives to some degree, punk rock and pop punk. And then it kind of died off, and it still is a bit dormant, but that's the cool thing about it is it's just dormant. So I hope that maybe, you know, it'll make its way through to the mainstream once again, led by us as a Grammy nominated artist.
Hell yeah, dude.
Hell yeah.
And I know, speaking of Grammys, I just saw, it looks like the Turnstile record that came out, if you're into a little bit of hardcore, it got nominated for a bunch of stuff, which I think is really wild. Cause I mean, the first time I think I saw Turnstile was maybe like in a room with like 80 people. And I mean,
me
it was
too.
Just like, it was crazy, but
love that band.
Oh, it's so good. That record is so good. It's transformative. It's definitely good for hardcore. It's good for rock. But so you're talking about drive-through records, and I think kind of a cool parallel. So I know this, the last record you did with Chris Badami, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, he is like the guy. I mean, I think he did like half of the records on drive-through. I mean, he did Hidden in Plain View, The Starting Line. He did Early November. So, I mean, like, what was it getting to work with someone who literally like kind of was integral in like the pop punk pedigree of the early 2000s? What was that like? I mean,
you said that perfectly. You guys are very articulate speakers. It's very, very different.
I'm not. Tom is.
The teacher's not, but
we try our
best. I'm short and to the point.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Badami is he's Houdini to make a band like us sound good. We grew up, I mean, Starting Line, Say It Like You Mean It, like, changed my life. I mean, like, he worked on Alistair's Records, who drive through records bands. He did, even when Drive Through created a sister label called Rushmore Records, he did A Day at the Fair. He did like the Houston Calls records. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. He's our boy, actually, now. Like, we were really nervous. We did a Space Pimps record with him. And, like, dude, we were so nervous going there. We were like, dude, we suck at playing instruments. This guy's going to, like, you know. And then you walk into a studio and he has, like, you know, gold records and stuff. I mean, he's pretty – if they did a documentary on Drive Thru, he would certainly be a central piece to that, because he helped those bands hone in their sounds. And he's the best, man. I mean, he's not only like the funniest, awesomest dude to work with. Like, you don't feel like, not that like playing music even ever feels like work, but like, you don't feel like you're like doing work when you're in a studio with him. He's just like making fart jokes. And like, he's like one of the guys, you know? So he's the best. He's awesome. And he helped make us sound how we sound.
That's awesome. And, also, he did, I think, almost every single record for one of my favorite bands, who are not in the pop punk space whatsoever, but if you're familiar, this band called Trophy Scars, who are this just unbelievable. I don't even know what you call them now. I mean, they were a post-hardcore band. Now they're kind of this like bluesy, psychedelic rock band, but one of my favorite bands, and he's done every one of their records. And the thing I think that's so impressive about Chris's work is every Trophy Scars record sounds a little bit different, not only sonically, musically, of course, but just like the type of just like grit that they got on stuff and you know, all the layering they do, man, it's so fantastic. So he's a treasure. You're absolutely right.
He is. And dude, to add to that, do you know that John from Trophy Scars is the engineer at Studio B in a studio?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Okay. John's a cool guy too. He is, he's like, again, a musical maestro, but they, when we were recording this most recent record, Bad Days Are Over, they were in Studio B finishing up songs too. So John's a great guy too, but that connection is really close because like they work with each other too every day now. So
yeah, that's awesome. And one of those things I got to try to figure out, I've been trying to get Needly in there to see if any of the dudes in the band are Devils fans. I'm going to find out at some point. And if I do, I'm going to get them on here for sure. But
dude, I'll make the hookup for sure. John's a good guy.
Yeah, if you could see if they're hockey fans, I'd love to have him on and just pick his brain because Totally. Literally some of the stuff they've done is just like is wild. But So on that topic, let's kind of chat a little bit about the new record. So Bad Days Are Over. Obviously, you've got it on four chord music, which of course is your own entity. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So I always like to talk to artists that are putting music out on their own labels and their own imprints and stuff, just because I know that can be a very liberating thing to do because you don't have to conform to what like a label is asking you to do. But at the same time, it can be very, very difficult. So what was your experience putting out this record by yourselves, especially, I wouldn't say maybe in the midst of a pandemic, but towards the tail end of a pandemic, but maybe still a pandemic, but in definitely a tumultuous time. So what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, we're definitely still a pandemic and it got released like right in the heart of it, right when the vaccine started getting rolling out. But yeah, so I started Four Chord Music, the label, in 2017. Honestly, under the Space Pimps and even Eternal Boy, we've had every single close call you could possibly think of. I mean, stories that you wouldn't even believe about record labels and about major labels flying to Pittsburgh to see us play in our hometown shows and, getting promised this and promised that. And, you reach your early 30s and you're just like, yo, like I can't do this anymore. Like I can't, we're either going to like quit thinking about labels or we're just going to quit playing music. So we decided to just quit thinking about labels. And I started Four Chord Music. I signed Eternal Boy. And then I signed a few other bands too. A band actually from Canada, and the bass player of this band is in Play Fight, which you had on your podcast. Oh, Jamie.
Yeah,
he's in a band called Fortune Cove. They used to be called Harbor. One of the best, most premier, perfect, old school pop punk bands that is coming out today. You need to go check out Fortune Cove when you can. So I signed them. I signed another band. And then I signed us. And I mean, it's really being a record label today is you're a marketing firm is all it is. It's not about securing distribution anymore. It's not about getting your record in stores. There are no stores for your record to get into unless you're vinyl, which is obviously a huge thing that Four Chord Music does. But it becomes a marketing game and how much buzz you can create, who you can schmooze to get on a Spotify curated playlist. And running a label is just like being in a band, except you're being in the band of other bands too, in order to get stuff done. So it's difficult. It's fun. First couple releases, not profitable, not supposed to be. But things are getting much better now. Probably have two or three more signings over the next year or two. And, but running a label is just like being in a band. It's a grind and you got to love the grind in order to be able to make it work.
Yeah, that's one of the things we had heard when we interviewed our buddy Corey from Near Mint Records, who have been doing some great stuff. And I remember he was saying, yeah, like the first couple of things you do, like you've got to be lucky enough to have some capital to do it because you know you're not going to make a return on that investment. But, once you start really tumbling down that big old hill, it starts working.
The big old hill.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, but yeah, go ahead.
I want to jump in. Yeah.
I know you.
So,
I know,
being the head of a label could be dangerous, especially for like Tom and I who are music lovers, because you would just want to sign like all your homies, right? Like that you know are like grinding it out. And you're like, I'm a fan of this band. Like, I believe in them. Like, how do you not do that? Because obviously, like on the mat, like the owner side, that could totally put your label in crumbles if you just do that. So
that's such a good question. Tell me about that. That's such a good question. That's like one of the best questions I've ever been asked ever about this. Yeah, I do. I mean, like, honestly, like being in a band and, you know, running the festival and running the label, like it's all about beat your boys, you know what I mean? And like your homies. So like, I get a lot of shit for the festival from a lot of people, particularly bands from Pittsburgh and even, you know, regional bands, that I put the same low build bands on the festival every year. It's like us, Keep Flying, a band called Lookout Loretta, Fortune Coat, like these bands that are like our boys, but it's like, that's why we're doing this, right? Like, I mean, like if you don't help out the people that are around you, like what's the point? Like when you have even a little success to not do it. And I do struggle with that with the label a little bit, but I also think that the best labels, and when I say best, I mean the most holistic, organically driven, the Drive Through Records, the Pure Noise Records, the Vagrant Records, they started by signing their homies. Mm-hmm. So I think that thankfully all of our homies are in really good bands. So it's a matter of convincing them that I can do something more for them that they can't already do for themselves, really.
Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this band, but I'm just like curious, because if I had a label, I would sign them in like a millisecond, the band Driveways.
Yeah. So that's, I don't know much about the band, but I do know that like we are one of the like similar artists on Spotify. We always get with Driveways and that. I don't know much about them. I know that they rule though. They're really good. Don't know much about them, but that is a really interesting kind of point. Like a lot of the bands that I discover now that aren't, you know, signed to Pure Noise or signed, you know, these labels that you end up hearing are from that Spotify similar artist thing. So mm-hmm. That's like one of the coolest things that comes out of Spotify. There's a lot of horse shit that comes out of Spotify, but I'll have to check out Driveways more. I definitely will.
Yeah, I'm just like so curious, especially in like the age of streaming, they're like crushing it. And it's just, dude. Like, whoa, where are all these labels and why are they not just like plowing down their doors?
Driveways. Yeah, dude. Wow. 200,000 monthly listeners. That is nutty, dude. Where are they from?
Boston.
Wow, dude. That's gnarly. Yeah, no, I mean, that's unheard of. They're teachers.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Let's sign them.
Yeah, right?
Pick them up. I'm glad that. I took a risk there, hoping one of you would know where that's from, and I'm very glad that you did.
Oh, of course. Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, here we go.
Love it. Love it. So I guess, you know, we talked two of your babies. Let's talk your third baby, which is the Four Chord Music Festival. Just had year number 7. Like, I don't want to talk year 7. I want to talk year 1.
Oh.
Tell me about year 1. Like, because when you start a big endeavor like that, like a festival, it's so like scary. So tell me about some of those fears and you know, all those things that were playing in your mind that you're like, well, this can go terribly wrong. We might get sued. Like, this is going to be a nightmare. Tell me about that and how you still like pulled it off.
Yeah. I mean, you know, started in my 20s, and ultimately Four Chord Music Festival gave birth to Four Chord Music. So Four Chord Music Festival is a great platform to, and it's growing, and there's stuff that I'm doing for Four Chord Music Festival 8 that is going to really make it grow. So it's good leverage point for some bands too. But year 1, the most fun, man. The most fun when you have no fucking idea what's going to happen. You have no idea what's going to happen next. Like, that's what sucks about getting older, by the way. It's not the getting older part. It's the fact that nothing feels new anymore. You have an opinion about everything. You've tried something, or at least something tangentially related to everything. So year 1, I was sick of tours passing on us. We'd submitted to tons of tours and, you know, again, the close call thing. And so I was like, fuck it. We're just going to do something in Pittsburgh. It used to be at a 1200 cap venue in Pittsburgh. Year 1 was the Wonder Years headlined. Real Friends, Modern Baseball, Turnover, We Are the Union, Rust Belt Lights, and then at the time we were still called the Space Pimps. So, and I remember, this is 2015. Turnover was not what Turnover is today. Modern baseball was not what they were today, and Real mm-hmm. Friends were not what they are today. So the big band, obviously the huge band then was the Wonder Years that did that. And it was weird, you know. I didn't know much, you know, in terms of like the fine print, right? So like my best friend from high school happens to be a lawyer, so he helped a lot. He, you know, we reviewed contracts, and I remember I was so nervous about getting these contracts and missing something. We spent 14 hours reading over an 8-page contract, marking it up, and we sent it back to the agents for the Wonder Years, and they were like, "Yo, like, nobody ever reads these contracts. Nobody ever marks this stuff up." Ended up going okay. A girl did fall on her head and was unconscious for a little bit, and I thought I was going to get sued, but we didn't get sued. And then I realized, oh, you should buy insurance, right, in case something happens. So year two, we got insurance. But, yeah, first year is real fun, man. You're flying by the seat of your pants. It was, you know, it was packed. It was sweaty. It was everything you'd think about in a festival. But again, it was at a club. So there was a tiny stage in the back of the venue we built with our hands. And wow. Then the stage in the actual venue that is stationary. So it's always fun the first time. First kiss is great. First time you drive a car with nobody in the car with you but yourself is great. And the first time you almost get sued at a music festival is the greatest.
Listen, so I'm gonna zoom it up to 4 chord 7, right? So I mean, I'm sure you've been asked this 1,000 times, but I can't not ask it. How do you book Blink 182?
Like, well, first of all, Blink changed my life. Changed my life unequivocally.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I remember the moment that I stole my sister's Dude Ranch CD when I was in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just changed. I can't even articulate or put into words. Like, that's why, like, I was like, oh, when I meet Mark, like, I don't even know what I'm going to say if I were to meet Mark. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just really gotten more, I got to say, if you ask a lot of these agents that represent these bands, they know me as the dude that's never going to stop, you know, and like for better, for worse. And like, I don't care if they don't like me. I don't know. I just have lost this sense of like, oh my God, I hope they like me type mentality.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the agents respect that, and a lot of them just want me to fuck off. but it just so happens that in 2019, we had the Offspring. The Offspring and Simple Plan. And the agency that runs that represents the Offspring also represents Blink, as well as Taylor Swift and Fall Out Boy and a million others. But and so that went okay. And then the following year, I just hit up their agent. I'm like, yo, I'm going to email you every day. Until or call your office every day. And this is the president of this agency. I mean, he's I don't know if there's a more important person in the touring side in the entire music industry than this person. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not going to stop calling your assistant or you every day until you give me a shot at Blink. He gave me a shot and he said, you know, you better make sure that this goes well. And there's a lot of pressure. And of course, pandemic hit, we had to push it back. And then obviously Mark got cancer which, praise Jesus, he's doing better.
He is,
but
yeah, sure.
they canceled all their 2020 tour dates. I was obviously devastated. I put my life savings and everything you could possibly think of into the show, but worked out okay. And that's how it happens. It's again, if you don't have a connection, it's about grind. Everything I do in life is about grind. Every single thing. So that's how Blink happened and then didn't happen.
But I mean, and it's like, you know, maybe they're not ultimately on the level of Blink, but I mean, you know, you got Rise Against to fill in, who are by no means no slouches. I mean, they're an enormous band too. But I mean, when you look at that festival lineup, you know, it's like, it really is astounding. And then, like, you know, just looking at the pictures of it and the enormity of it all, and, you know, you guys taking over a whole baseball stadium. I mean, it's just like, you know, talking about episode 1 to episode 7 and then whatever is coming for episode 8, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, how do you stay humble?
There's a million people involved, obviously. I mean, that Four Chord Music and Four Chord Music Festival is just me. But I mean, obviously there's sound and lighting people that I've hired that, you know, killed it. And I mean, I don't know. It's not a big deal to me at this point. It's not. How do I say that? That sounds incredibly egotistical. I don't mean it in the sense that like it's not a big deal that I. It's more like, cool. This year was fucking awesome. I had, looking back on it, like when I'm by myself, I reflect on it and I'll shed a tear and say, dude, like I don't know how this happened during a worldwide pandemic. There was no super spreader event issues. There was no like all of that stuff is great. But you know, literally the day after the festival ended, I was on the phone with agents for the next year. Mm-hmm. I like to think I'm humble, but I just want to do more. I just want to do better. I want to make it better for people that were there. I want to improve on the things that didn't go great, on the back mm-hmm. end. But it's definitely difficult. I mean, you can ask my friends and my wife, and it is a full-time job. I mean, without question. And when I look back at that comp video and I look back at the pictures, dude, I mean, it leaves you speechless. It takes your breath away, knowing that where it started and where it's at, maybe I should do a TikTok where it's like, this is where it started and now here's where we're at. But
go for it.
I wish I had a better answer. I mean, it's easy to stay humble whenever you're constantly grinding. That's a good answer.
Sure.
Now, since it sounds like you and I have similar personalities, you played Warped Tour.
Yep, many times.
Warped Tour doesn't exist now. Like, there's that void. There is a void where there's not like a traveling festival. That must have come into your mind, right?
It did. But here's a better question for both of you. Does Warped Tour, can and should Warped Tour ever be replaced?
That's a tough question.
And I have an opinion on that. I mean,
well,
I
go
think,
for it.
You know, when you think about it, like at the core of Warped Tour, you got your real big fish, Less Than Jake's. Like those are the staples. But it sounds like you've built your own version of that now with Forecourt. Like you mentioned Keep Flying. Like you could have replaced Keep Flying years ago, but the fact that you've stayed loyal to them, like Keep Flying is now just like, they're on the up. And like, who knows if you take this festival another 5 years, like Keep Flying could be at that level of like a Less Than Jake or a real big fish. Who knows? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'd be
around that.
It would be sick. I mean, I just feel like personally, again, I was that kid that was at Warped Tour every single year. I mean, I mean, without question, I was there. I didn't miss one Warped Tour. Obviously, Spaceman's played a lot of them. Eternal Boy played the last Warped Tours. But I just feel like there's something so special about Warped Tour that it's like almost trying to cover a song by Blink when you're a pop punk band. It's like unless it's like for a tribute record or like you're doing mm-hmm. something totally different, like you don't cover the band in your genre. It's like I don't know if I'd ever want to be a Warped Tour. Like Kevin Lyman created something that was so special. Like let's do something special in a different way, maybe. But to your question, unequivocally, yes, it has crossed my mind. Yeah. Without question.
Like, me in North Carolina, I'm always super jealous when I see the lineup come out and I'm like, oh, that's like 10, 12 hours away.
Dude,
a little too
you
far.
Guys are both coming to 2022. We'll take care of you. I'll give you beers. I'll give you hot dogs. And it will be a great time.
You had me at hot dogs, man. You did. and you know what? And the truth of it is, it's just like the fact that there are still people that are willing to take on the enormity of what that is such an important thing for our music scene, right? Because not only did, and this is the point I was going to make, is not only did Warped Tour leave a hole for artists and of course and left a hole for fans, but it left a hole like in the scene itself, because it was like I hate to take a line from a Blink-182 song, but I mean, like you couldn't wait for the summer at the Warped Tour. Like you couldn't. Like it was just like every year, you'd get out of school. At least we wouldn't in Long Island at the end of June. It was just like, oh, sick! Warped Tour's coming in a couple of weeks.
Hold on, Tom just said in Long Island. I just had to interrupt him.
Did Jones I say Beach. In Long Island?
Jones Beach.
I'm gonna take your Long Island cool card away because you just said in Long Island.
As opposed to what?
On Long Island. Ooh. Yeah, I know. I'm always getting called. I'm always getting called out, but that's okay. It's okay. But but essentially, just at the end of it, the point that I'm really trying to make is, like, you know, if it isn't for people like you who are willing to take on this responsibility, and not only that, but take on a responsibility in a space that's safe, in a scene that, like, is unfortunately perpetually unsafe at times. Mm. And that's one of the things about Warped Tour that, unfortunately, it was so big and so enormous that Kevin Lyman couldn't have controlled it at all times and make sure that these spaces were safe. And you hear the unfortunate stories about, you know, the grooming and the unprofessionalism and I'm not going to harp on it, but, you know, like, the bad things that come out of that.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
Knowing that there are people that are not only committed to creating a space that, you know, enriches music and allows people to go see some of their favorite artists, but to do so in a safe way is super important. So the fact that you're able to cultivate that over these years, and I think of other festivals like, you know, the Fest in Gainesville and I forget the name of it, there's one up in Toronto that they do all the time. That's that, you know, it's incredible, you know. So
yeah,
Pooza Fest. Yeah, that's in Montreal.
Yep.
But there's another one. It's like a more pop punk one in Toronto. I can't think of it. But nonetheless, it's just that kind of stuff is incredible, and it needs to stick around in the absence of things like Bamboozle and Skate and Surf and, you know, Warped Tour and all that kind of stuff that, you know, was around when pop punk was enormous, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you bring up the safe space issue, and that's certainly something that is, really, really important to me. I mean, it's obviously very hard at times to control. Anytime growth happens, it's very hard to micromanage every growth spurt. For example, we have a ton of nonprofits at the event that help, I don't want to say keep us in check, but keep everybody involved in check. You know, there can't be any bullshit at Four Core Music Fest. If there's any bullshit, I'm tapping you on the shoulder. I'm kicking you the fuck out. You know what I mean? Like, there's no room for that. And that's what punk rock really is to me, right? It's about, like, standing up for those that can't really stand up for themselves. Yeah, so,
of course.
So Kevin really had a lot on his shoulders. I mean, you know, you're talking about doing a 15 to 25,000 person show for what, 70 days, 60 days. To manage that, you have to start leaning on other people and other things and other mechanisms. I fear that day when that comes, I can certainly see that perspective of it. Yeah,
for sure. And then the one last thing I want to ask, and then we'll take a quick break and shoot to our sponsor over here, DraftKings, and then we'll just get into hockey talk. But
yes,
I'm just curious, as you know, the size of this festival and what it's become, and the fact that Eternal Boy plays it. Are you able to block out that, like, 30 or 40 minute set and actually enjoy it? Or while you're up there, are you just like, what the hell's going on? Like, is this happening? Is this going on time? Like, are you able to separate that little chunk of time to enjoy the crowd and enjoy what you're doing and not be like freaking out?
Very, very nice question to ask. Most people don't ask that. I really appreciate that. Most of the time I do. This year I did not. Just because of COVID, you know, we were testing almost every person that came through the venue. I mean, we had testing up front. I mean, there were so many. I mean, the footprint of the festival was, you know, you needed a golf cart to get around. I mean, there was a lot of things on my mind that day. Generally, I mean, 2019, I had the best time of my life almost at any show. Generally, I can do that. It's a lot of people on the back end, like a lot of the tour managers for the bands, ask that to me. And I enjoy it. I also enjoy seeing all of my friends succeeding and people loving them too. You know, I like seeing Keep Flying go over super well every year. Like, makes me stoked. Our boys, patent pending, like our best friends, from Long Island, like seeing how well Joe can just take a crowd over no matter where he is. We've toured with them in Europe. I mean, he does it every fucking night. Like, to see it in my hometown, like, with my people and our, you know, I don't want to say my community, but, like, the community of the Pittsburgh music scene is enough for me to have a great time. But it's definitely, definitely 75% stress.
I can imagine. I mean, excellent. So,
but you guys have to come out. You guys have to come out next year if it's safe and it's not, obviously, if COVID's not, you know, something that prohibits travel or you don't feel comfortable with, I understand, but you guys got to make it out.
So I'm not going to ask the lineup question because I know you can't say anything, but do you have like a window in time? What, like
I'm an open book, dude. I'll tell, I sign no NDAs. I make sure I don't sign any NDAs. I, oh, man, I can't believe I'm talking about this. It's in my brain so much, and like I work on it so much, and it just so happens that this podcast landed like 2 hours before conversations and everything happened. So Blink is not going to play this year. Again, just I didn't feel comfortable putting the full court press on them, given what Mark is going through, and you know, so it's not them. You know, it's the lineup. I think that I'm curating is going to be super cool. It's going to have a good amount of throwback for people that loved, you know, early 2000s. And it's going to certainly have the new flavor for people. And that's always what I want to do. I want to suffice my inner, if I'm not doing it partly for me, then why am I doing it? Which is the early 2000s shit. And then it's also, again, there's going to be a lot of new stuff that people like, but, off the air, I will tell you guys some more.
Okay.
Love to hear that.
Are you thinking late summer, early summer?
September 10th.
Okay.
And maybe 9th. Both.
Okay. Love to hear that. So I'm going to put that on my calendar.
Do it.
Just because of the, just really because of the hot dogs. Everything else, that's all icing on the cake. But
nothing like Pittsburgh hot dogs compared to New York hot dogs, right?
Hell yeah, let's do it. So we're going to get into some hockey talk, but right now going to give you a quick little read from our sponsors. And unfortunately, I'm not going to do it in a Doc Emmerich voice because all he does is scream and I can't scream for that long. But what I'll do, though, is I'll give you a little bit of Doc Emmerich at the end. But yeah, nonetheless, okay, fair enough. So anyways, so DraftKings, you know, they're one of our sponsors and one of our really our best sponsors. And we really love, you know, all of the, you know, all the great things that they do here, you know, for us at Bar Down and the Hockey Podcast Network. But they've got a really cool thing going on because the NHL season is underway and, you know, DraftKings Sportsbook, which is an official sports betting partner of the NFL, the NHL, I should say, unbelievable offer. And we're celebrating the greatest sport on ice. So it's better than curling. It's better than figure skating. It's the greatest sport on ice. And new customers can bet just $1 on any NHL game, and they can win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. So either team, doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper, doesn't matter if it's, you know, knocking the water bottle off of the top or top cheese, doesn't matter if it's the cookie jar, however they light that lamp, you're going to win. And if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. You can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contest. And DraftKings is giving all of their new customers a free shot at like millions of dollars in total prizes with just one deposit. Unbelievably cool. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Again, that is THPN, the Hockey Podcast Network. THPN. Throw down $1 on any NHL game and you can win 100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. So if, you know, Zach Parise scores a goal, you might hear something like, "He shoots, he scores! Zach Parise!" So this week, one puck in the net. That's your really big win with the promo code THPN. Don't forget that. THPN. And that's at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. You must be 21 years or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? 1-800-GAMBLER.
Boom.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Now, did you shart when you just did that? Is that what happened?
100% sharted. It's just a bad
now,
shart.
First off, DraftKings probably loves us because Tom can make a 30-second ad read 4 minutes long. So sure they get just free time out of us.
Absolutely.
Love DraftKings. Love me some DraftKings.
Yeah, now, man. Also, you know, Tom and I have been making those Doc Emmerich jokes for the longest time, like, he shoots, he scores, Zach Parise. And it just, like, as you were doing that, I was like, holy crap, first of all, Zach Parise's still playing hockey. Yeah. And he plays hockey on our team. Like,
yeah.
Why have we not been doing that more?
Whoa, your team?
Like, now that we're on our team, we don't even do it.
What team is he on now?
He's on the Islanders.
Yeah. Is he really? Where did I miss that?
Yeah, it was like one of those Lou Lamoriello, like, sneaky pickups. The Minnesota Wild bought him out.
Not doing a whole lot of much, but...
Yeah, but the whole team isn't. You guys got a whole lot older this season with Chara and now Parise on that team. You guys were young before, but even Barry Trotz can't work his magic.
No, that's a tough one, man. But let's just dive into it, man. So being from Pittsburgh, lifelong Pens fan, I assume. Awesome. So
yeah, I saw that four-cord Penguin shirt. Which is good as hell.
Incredible.
I'll send you guys a bunch, but we have every year there's a Pittsburgh Penguin parody four chord. I am a massive Penguins fan. I played hockey growing up. When you're from a city that has a player like Mario Lemieux, it's hard to not love the team. And what I like about Pittsburgh, I say this very cautiously, we do have very smart hockey fans here. Unlike Philadelphia, we have very, very smart hockey fans here. I have to say, I have been to the Coliseum for a Penguins-Islanders game. My goal is to go see the Penguins play in every single away arena in the entire league. I'm at like 20 so far. I believe that Islanders fans are also very fair.
I don't think we've ever gotten that.
And intelligent.
I don't think so.
I hate to say this, but I think it depends for the Islanders fans and just being an Islander fan and knowing Islander fans. It's a generational thing. I would probably tell you that Islanders fans like that came up at the same same age as Mikey and I, like that are in like kind of between, I don't know, let's say like 25 and 40, let's call it, are much more like – grounded and down to earth than like the old heads from that are now 60 and 70 that watch like the Islanders like cup years. Because they got so jaded that like you almost can't pull them out of how jaded they are because they experienced like 4 years of like absolute bliss and then like really essentially like 25 years of like misery. So it's hard to pull them out of that. And then the other generational gap, I think, with Islander fans is like, you know, like as far as like being super critical, like it's almost like they don't understand Trotz's system in so much that like there doesn't need to be like a superstar. Right?
Yeah, 100%.
And I feel like the old heads just don't get that because they're like, well, Bossy and Gillies and Trache, and it's just like, yeah, for sure, okay, but like that was a different time. I mean, those motherfuckers didn't even wear helmets, you know, so but I get it, you know, and I get there's always going to be that divide, but cool thing is I appreciate your acknowledgement of that because I happen to think that Mikey and I of the Islanders contingent of fans that we come across are probably the most level-headed. Like we weren't the ones burning JT's jersey. Like we weren't the ones like when he, you know, got his head almost taken off in the playoffs were like serves him right. You know, like we weren't those guys. And you know, some Islander fans are. It sucks.
Yeah, I mean I love the Islanders franchise in general. You know, coming from Pittsburgh, I mean we had Brian Trottier for two cups in Pittsburgh too. Mm-hmm. We love Trotz. I mean, you know, it's really interesting because in Pittsburgh, the only times we've had success are when we had superstars on the team. Barry Trotz, he succeeded in Washington, but like they didn't win a cup. I mean, they didn't go to the finals under Trotz. I don't believe they ever did. And he doesn't do well when he's micromanaging an ego of Alex Ovechkin or, you know, maybe John Tavares, you could say that. But I do really appreciate the teams that don't have the superstars, and the Pittsburgh Penguins over the next 5 years are going to go through that and see if that's even remotely possible to happen. And with, you know, we were talking before, the Penguins are up for sale. So if the Penguins ownership allows us to. I think that we have no choice but to create a Vegas Golden Knights type team, you know, in order to succeed in the 21st century hockey. So, you know, I can appreciate that for sure.
Now, how do you feel about the sale of the team? Like, so, as a fan, like, deep down inside, like, are you feeling optimistic or are you a little worrisome?
So anytime we, again, Pittsburgh is the most spoiled sports town too, ever. I mean, between obviously baseball, it's been a very dark 30 years in baseball, but, you know, we had four pennants in the 70s. We had four Super Bowls in the 70s. We've had, since in my generation, we've had five Stanley Cups from 1992 to today. We've had two Super Bowls in the 2000s. I mean, we are totally spoiled. And then to increase the level of spoiledness that we have, one of the greatest, if not greatest, NHL player of all time, Mario Lemieux, purchases the team. So now it's like, I'm skeptical for a new team, particularly maybe one of the wealthiest sports owning franchises. They own Liverpool FC, you know, they own the Boston Bruins, they own some NASCAR. But the good thing is that if the sale does go through, and obviously the NHL has to approve it, this is a massive sale. I mean, this is like, this is essentially like if it were baseball, it'd be like the Yankees being sold. Yeah. Lemieux is going to stay as a minority partner. So he will still own the minority, like 49% of the team, which is really encouraging. So I feel okay about it. They'll infuse money and some, you know, maybe some new leadership up top and upper administration. So, you know.
Uh-oh. Well, let's just keep rolling and Rishi will pop in once he maybe gets us. Oh, there he is.
Whoa,
we lost him.
We're good. We're going to just keep rolling.
Yeah. I don't know what happened there. Anyway, we were apprehensive at first, but I think that we are, we'll be okay. We'll be okay.
And I really like the next year or two, like, as you mentioned, how they handle like an aging Crosby and aging Malkin, like that is really what's going to like pave the way for the next 10, 15 years of this franchise, like how they handle it. Because the last thing you want to get like stuck with is like their value to deplete and you get nothing for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but, like, you know, I can tell you now Crosby is going to retire Penguin. I have called for a trade of Malkin since 2017. I mean, I love
that. Might have been the time to do it. Like,
it's done now. There's no value. His contract will expire. He'll sign for a fraction of what he's making now, and that'll be the end of his career, unfortunately. You know, guys like Chris Letang, too. I mean, you got to remember, from 2003 to 2008, here are the Penguins' draft picks. Brooks Orpik, Marc-Andre Fleury, Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby, Chris Letang, Jordan Staal, Jake Guentzel. I mean, we are a well-oiled machine. I mean, like, we are – like, the Wilkes-Barre-Scranton Penguins have been – are, like, number one, you know, in the playoffs, in the finals every single year. Like, we shouldn't have to worry, but we are worried. We are going to worry, obviously. And, you know, there's no future, in my opinion, for Evgeny Malkin in Pittsburgh from this on. I mean – he's a Russian player. I'm not trying to get weird about Russian players, but they tend to be very lazy unless you're a Sergei Fedorov, Dominic Hasek, you know, type kind of player. Mm-hmm. Pavel Datsyuk, I guess, too. But, you know, we are in trouble. You know, right now, we're playing right now. You're making me fucking miss the Penguins game for this.
My bad.
But we're playing the Habs, so it's going to go fine, I think. But
yeah, we're
5-6. We're 5-6-4. Like, we're second to last. We are at the bottom with you guys.
Yeah. It's not been great for either of us, but you know, you guys were at least battling injury and now, you know, it just came out yesterday that we're going to be battling injury with our star defenseman out for Ryan Pulock. Yeah. So he's out for 6 to 8 weeks. Could have been even longer. So it stinks there. And then I know he hasn't been playing great as of late, but kind of one of our core guys, locker room guys, Josh Bailey, is stuck in Florida. He's got, you know, COVID protocol.
And the COVID protocol.
And it's that one hurts me the most because, first of all, he has been with the Islanders through like some really tough years and has stuck it out. Like the fan base turned on him, like he was the scapegoat for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And then we finally get this brand new arena that he's probably been, you know, he's been with the team since 2008.
Ooh.
He's like, all right, I'm finally get my new arena. And he's not even going to be in the game opening night because of COVID protocol.
That's gut wrenching. Like as a hockey fan, like that's like Crosby not playing the first, game at Consol Energy Center. 2010, we got a new arena after the igloo. Yeah. I'll tell you what though, the Isles have the Penguins number. I mean, that's without question. I mean, it seems like Anders Lee, Josh Bailey at the time. I know Eberle's not on the team anymore, right?
Nah, he's on the Kraken now. Yeah,
he's on the Kraken, right? I mean, dude, it seemed like every time we would draw the Islanders number in the playoffs, and like we'd be cruising, and it'd go to 6-7 games overtime. Then it would, finally, you guys beat us the last two times we played in the playoffs.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the last time the Islanders beat the Penguins, what was that? Right before 2019, before pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2019.
Pretty, yeah.
That was the game. That was the series. You guys swept us.
Yep.
Yeah, that was the series that Lemieux made a statement to the to upper administration saying that we need to make a change. So thank you for fucking up my life.
I mean, but what happened that year? We swept the Penguins, and then we got swept by the Blue Jackets.
Jackets.
Oof. No, we got swept by the Hurricanes.
Hurricanes.
And I was there game four for that sweep. That was the most like difficult fan moment I've ever had in my life to watch your team get swept on the road. And like,
in North Carolina,
those fans giving it to me. Like normally they leave us alone, but they were giving it to us.
I mean, come on, dude. It's like saying you're a Hurricanes fan is like saying you're a Capitals fan. It's like, there's no real like core fan base. It's called PNC Bank Arena, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that where the Hurricanes play? That's a Pittsburgh bank, Pittsburgh National Bank. I mean,
is that what it stands for?
Yeah, PNC Bank is Pittsburgh's biggest one of our biggest economic drivers.
That's so funny.
It's tough seeing your team lose in another city. But here's a question for you guys: what is your most memorable game you've ever been to with the Islanders?
I got it.
Go for it.
All right, so 2001, we're on Long Island, 9/11 happens,
and,
the Islanders start their season on like a 7 or 8 game road trip. So you got to figure September 11th, right around the start of the hockey season, New York is like going through the toughest moment ever, and the Islanders that summer made all of these moves. We brought in Mike Pekka, Alexei Yashin, like unbelievable like stars that I actually knew who they were. Like normally whenever the Islanders brought someone in, I'd be like, who is that? And like here they are making moves, and then 9/11 happens, they're on the road, and they actually I think they went like 7-0-1, like they lost like an overtime game, and like that was when New York was like finally shifting, because it's a Rangers like town, unfortunately, and people actually started talking about the Islanders. And I remember going to their home opener that year, and like the American flags out on the ice. It was unbelievable. That was my moment.
Did they win?
No, they lost that game.
Who'd they play?
I think it was like Detroit. I'm so bad with that. Dude, I could go to a game like 2 weeks ago and forget like who did they play, like what was the score, they win. Like I'm not good like that. But there's some people that we get on this podcast, they're like, yeah, I went to my first game 1992. They played the so and so. The score was this. This guy scored. I'm like, how the hell do you remember that?
Yeah, I can do that.
You could do it. See, I'm not like that, unfortunately.
They played the Red Wings in early 2000s. I mean, they were the team.
Yeah, they were
the team.
I kind of should look that up.
Honestly,
you can give yours, Tom, as I look this up.
No, honestly, I was going to say that, like, unfortunately, I don't like, as far as like being at a hockey game, I've never really been, I've never had the pleasure of going to a playoff game yet, unfortunately. You know, and a lot of the games that I've been to were a blast and a lot of fun, but none of them were like really like incredible or profound moments. But
right.
Some of the stuff that, you know, I remember is like being really young, like being like 7 or 8 years old, like 94, 95. And like, you know, my uncle taking me to games, you know, my mom taking me to games and stuff, and just like having those experiences of being like so young and being so like blown away by just like hockey in general. Right. And then, you know, I've made this well known, but like my love for hockey started, you know, being young, going to games, and then it really started to flourish, excuse me, when I started getting into video games and I started playing the NHL series for Sega, Super Nintendo, PlayStation. Like that's where I started to really love hockey. And that's where, like, I would say, like, when I was probably 12 or 13 years old, like I was that stat nerd, because like I would play, you know, these games so often, and I would know, you know, all the West Coast teams and all the guys on the teams and like all these, like, that's how I learned about like the Team Mussolini and Paul Kariya and Pavel Bure and Jerome Iginla and, you know, like Luke Robitaille and all these guys that were on the West Coast that, like, yeah, I never got to see them because, you know, if Islanders played, you know, the Kings or the Sharks or whoever, it was 10:30, I was in bed by then, you know?
Yeah.
But I always felt like I was such an impressive little young guy because, like, people would talk about hockey and I'd be like, oh, yeah, Trevor Linden's one of my favorite players. And they're like, who? And I'm just like, yeah, he's on Vancouver. Like, get with it, like, nerd, you know? So, like, that's kind of like, that's kind of where my love for hockey started to really flourish. And then, of course, I did the thing that most people who love music and musicians and all that stuff, where you hit a point where, like, someone tells you that, like, you know, professional sports are stupid and you're like, yeah,
yeah, me too.
So that happened. I had a long period, I'd say probably 4 or 5 years, where like I stopped caring about all those kind of things because I was young and impressionable, and, you know, people were like, ah, that stuff is dumb, like counterculture, like just listen to more punk rock. And I was like, okay. So like I got rid of all my, like, you know, I stopped playing video games and I stopped watching sports, man. I used to be, I shit you not, man, like 8 years old, I would fall asleep with SportsCenter on and I would wake up with SportsCenter.
Fucking love that. So that's a story I wanted to hear there, Tom. I mean, that's it, man.
That's the shit.
That is what that's how I remember it too. Yep. And I was the same thing. High school, I was like, ooh, dude, like more Blink, more Pennywise, more NoFX.
100%, man. And it's a bummer that, you know, like that kind of, that, yeah, the bummer that happened. It really is. Yeah. Nah, it really is, but
yeah, luckily, no, I agree. I totally agree.
You get older, and then you realize the error of your ways, and then you go back to it. So, yeah.
Well, it makes like when you.
I think there's a delay now, which is why I'm trying to go slow. There's a delay here now.
I noticed that.
But I was going to comment on Tom. You know, you mentioning how, you know, playing video games is how you got exposed to a lot of those West Coast players, and the first thing I think about is Connor McDavid. And like, all I hear about is how fantastic Connor McDavid is. And like, the things he's doing are unbelievable. I think I've only watched maybe like 5 or 6 games where Connor McDavid's played, because it's, you know, first of all, Edmonton's not getting those national games. And then like, I have the hockey package, but by the time their games start at 10 o'clock at night, being a third grade teacher, there's no chance I'm staying up that late. Like, no chance. I'm deep in REM sleep by that time.
Yeah, no, I mean, the NHL Network has really helped my love for hockey grow even more. But yeah, dude, I mean, I'm the same way, man. I played all those video games. I was a stat guy. I collected every single hockey card. I at my parents' house, I have the biggest hockey card collection this side of the border of Canada. But for me, again, you know, it's like, I loved all those players, man. Like, and then like Marcus Naslund was a guy that was drafted a Penguin and then went to the Canucks. So I then loved the Canucks. You know, Pavel Bure was like, dude, I mean, that dude was next level. He's the Connor McDavid of that time, you know? Mm-hmm. So that really, I'm similar in that. I got into the stats and into the card game, and then I lost interest, and then I got back into it, I hate to say, when Crosby got drafted.
Yeah. But you shouldn't hate to say that. I mean, like, a lot of Crosby gets that stigma, crybaby Crosby, this, that, and the other thing. But like, if it wasn't for Crosby, who knows, honestly, where the NHL would be right now. If it wasn't for guys like Crosby and Ovi and, that turn of the, 09 to 010 to 10 and 11, that Blackhawks team. I mean,
yeah,
like,
dude,
the NHL was like, coming out of when was the
05
right? Our senior year, dude. How do you ever forget that?
Like, coming out of that, man, like, the NHL could have been like dead in the water.
Well, here's a really interesting question. I'd be very impressed if you guys knew this. Do you know, after the lockout, right? Because the lockout, it was the Crosby Ovechkin draft. They changed the rules. No more two line offside passes. The trapezoid, mm-hmm. yep. The yep. smaller goals. What network had the rights to watch to get the NHL games nationally right after the lockout?
Right after the lockout?
This shows how in trouble the NHL was.
I couldn't even tell you.
Versus.
Dude, so, okay. Yes, it became Versus, but it was called OLN, the Outdoor Network.
Wow.
So they could not get any contract. ESPN, NBC wasn't even close. They do one season with OLN, the Outdoor Network. Then that gets bought by Versus. Then that shifted to NBC. But without that Crosby-Ovechkin matchup, without, in that same draft class was like Ryan Getzlaf, was like Corey Perry, was like these dudes that like made hockey great again. Not to steal Violent Gentlemen's phrases.
No, but we can. Shout out Violent Gentlemen's. They are the best.
They are the best. The best. But yeah, man, without those dudes, I mean, like, there would be no NHL. There'd be no, it might not be any NHL.
Yeah.
And can I just say something real quick? I'm so proud. Like, I'm so proud of myself that I remembered Versus. And now that I think back on that, like, holy cow, they played on a network called Versus. And like, what the heck is that? Like, are you kidding me? What the heck? And I totally forgot about that, that era. Holy cow.
And not only that, when they announced like this year that they were going to enter into a partnership with ESPN for like 7 years or however long, that blew me away, because after the lockout happened, the ESPN just denounced hockey, man. Like, and I've said it on the podcast many a times, but even up until like 2 or 3 years ago, the NBA finals and the NHL finals typically always run concurrently, right?
Yep.
And when I tell you, man, that like you could have had like a 3-0 barn burner in like game 3 of the cup and ESPN would just be like, this just in, like Steph Curry like has yellow shoelaces now. And they would just do like 45 minutes of discourse on his yellow like shoelaces while like poor Linda Cohn and Barry Melrose are just in the back like, can we please talk about hockey? And they're like, shut up. You don't talk about hockey.
Yeah, like, dude. ESPN fucking pushed NHL. I mean, you couldn't – Penguins win the Cup or Blackhawks win the Cup. The Kings win the Cup. Bruins win the Cup. Those are the teams that in that era were, like, really killing it. It's like – it was, like, the last thing at the – like, before the last commercial. So it wasn't even, like, the last part of SportsCenter. It sucks, but I mean, it just goes to show that this is all business. Now they have the contract. They're going to talk about the NHL way more. Barry Melrose, though, I don't know if you noticed, does Barry Melrose seem off to you?
He's always seemed off.
No? I don't know, man. I have such an appreciation for Linda Cohn, because she tried her damnedest, man. She did. Like, she was always an advocate for the NHL. And now that between ESPN and TNT and getting guys like, Gretzky involved and, I'm trying to think of who they have on their panel.
It's Nasty.
It is Nasty. I think Anson Carter, still, and Gretzky. And there's someone else who I can't think about. Older guy. It'll come to me. But anyways, it's awesome. I'm a proponent for anything that the world can do to lift the NHL up. It's incredible. Even if it's something stupid, like, them pulling the Kraken's draft picks out of the fish that they're throwing around at, at, at the fish market in Seattle. Like, as kitschy as that was, like, great.
Dude, the Golden Knights intro stuff.
Yep, exactly. If you're getting more eyes on hockey, why the hell not, right?
I agree completely.
Amen. So let's just turn it back to music real quick and what's going on with Eternal Boy, because I did see that you also just announced your holiday show. So let's chat that real quick. I know Keep Flying's on it, but you know, how many years have you done this holiday show, and what should we expect?
So normally we tour, we would, you know, we'd be on the road. This, we did Four Chord, and this is the only other show that we're doing in 2022 or 2021. This is now probably the seventh installment of our, when we did it back when we were called the Space Pimps the last 2 years. And then, so it's probably the seventh year we've done it. New venue in Pittsburgh. It's a 500 cap space. It's a really nice, venue called Thunderbird. Our boys Keep Flying are on it, who are, you know, our besties. They're, of course, a lot of them are Long Island guys. Patton Penning was supposed to play it, but Joe has a conflict with his new, musical endeavor, we'll say. Then we have a band from Pittsburgh who are on Four Chord every year as well. This is like Four Chord, the small bill of Four Chord, called Lookout Loretta. And then we always put a new local band, from the Pittsburgh area on. They're called The Middle Room. It's usually a great time. Normally we do like a half cover set. So like 1 year we did a half cover set of Blink. Another band did a half cover set of Newfound. Another did a half cover set of The Starting Line. But we just did it straightforward just because, you know, I mean, we wanted to keep it short and sweet. But there's no Penguin game that night. We always book the show on a night where there is not a Penguin game. And as a season ticket holder of the Penguins, by the way, did I tell you that? Season ticket holder.
Is this year one?
This is my first big boy purchase with any money I had ever made in anything. I got it the year 2008. So holiday show is Pittsburgh Penguin friendly for those that are in Pittsburgh. And I did not check the Long Island schedule, but I am sure that they will probably be losing the game if they are playing a game that night. So we do that every year. It's around Christmas and that's it. It's a good time.
Hell yeah. I love those holiday shows. I don't think I've ever attended one, but I don't know why
I've done a couple.
Seeing like, you know, notoriously the Starting Line do theirs, the Wonder Years do theirs, Every Time I Die do theirs. Yep. I'm like, man, that is so awesome. And I see Keep Flying has their own like version of it on New Year's Day. And they're playing the Driveways.
We were supposed to play it, but it's really tough to make a show happen, you know, on New Year's Day. But Driveway. Oh yeah, they're coming from Boston or Massachusetts.
Yep,
Mass. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I those holiday shows are always great. They're always really cool because there's always little surprises and all that kind of stuff. I've been to a couple of the Starting Lines and at Hammerstein, and they're always a blast. So. Love that. Love holiday shows. Really super excited for what's on the horizon for Eternal Boy and Four Chord. Really looking forward to Four Chord 8 in September. And looking forward to
all those hot dogs.
Oh, so many hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
That's the way my wife says hot dogs. Hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Good for her, man. She loves her Chicago dog and she's the best, man. So, dude, Rishi, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to be on here. Give us some insight about, you know, what it's like to book an enormous music festival. Just getting to know a little bit more about you, you know, Eternal Boy, you know, Four Chord Music, the label and all this great stuff. It really is such a blast. We're Mikey and I are we don't say it often enough, but we're really lucky to do what we do. And to, you know, have 143 episodes of all different people who love hockey just as much and sometimes probably even more than we do. Just this parallel that we've been able to explore is really great. So from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for being on with us. Real quick before
we shoot. Dude, you should have just said 143 because it's episode 143.
Oh, that means I love you in numbers.
Like weird like beeper language.
In beeper language. Yeah, I guess so. But real quick, if you just want to give a quick social drop, just so everyone who's listening and checking in can know where to find Eternal Boy, can know where to find Four Chord Music Festival, Four Chord Music, drop those on us, and then we will lead out into the good night.
I want to thank you guys, first of all, very much. What interesting people to meet. You know, anytime you guys are even in the area, you want to catch a Penns Isles game anywhere, let's make it happen. Forecourt 8, your names are on the guest list, so you better show up. I'll be offended. I'm kidding. I won't be offended, but you should come. So thank you for that. EternalBoyMusic.com, everything you'll ever need to know is on there. Forecourtmusic.com, F-O-U-R, chordmusic.com for the label. For F-O-U-R, chordmusicfestival.com for everything you would need about the festival. It's basically the landing pages that you can get all the info. Go Pens.
Amen. I love
great
it.
Great way to end it off. So from all of us here, Bar Down, thank you so much for being on. And you have a great rest of your night, all right?
Later.
See ya.
I know this time it couldn't be any worse, but I'm better late than never. She epitomizes independence, yeah. I know what you're thinking. She's a little misunderstood and right. I'm in love.